On today's show, where does Victor Wembanyama rank among the greatest draft prospects of all time? DeJounte Murray makes his Atlanta Hawks debut. How did he look next to Trae Young? Plus, Draymond Green apologizes to the Warriors, but is that enough to smooth things over? All of that and so much more on today's episode of Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to a Friday episode of Locked On NBA, your daily podcast on the NBA. However you might be tuning in on YouTube, Odyssey, or on your favorite podcast app, thank you so much for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. I'm Wes Goldberg here, as always, with Adam Mattes. LeBron James wants a team in Las Vegas. Draymond Green apologizes to the Warriors for punching Jordan Poole, but we'll begin today in Las Vegas, where French super prospect Victor Wembanyama continues to dazzle and impress with his team playing exhibitions in Vegas this week. After scoring 37 points on Tuesday, he finished with 36 points, 11 rebounds, 4 blocks, 4 assists on Thursday. Adam, we're going to talk about where he ranks among the great prospects of this century a little bit later in the show, but I want to zoom out a little bit. My question to you, Adam, is do you think that this week's performances will influence even more teams to tank for the chance to draft him in next year's lottery?
Yes, 100% yes. I don't, now here's the caveat here, Wes. I think there's a lot of teams that are telling themselves at this very moment that they're not going to tank, that are going to probably pull the cord on the season a little bit earlier, just seeing this guy, because he is, or he does appear to be, I don't want to spoil segment three, he does appear to be a near can't miss prospect. Like, you look at this guy and you think the floor of him looks like all-star. Floor, the worst case scenario, you know, if you're healthy, looks like that. A lot can go right, a lot can go wrong. I mean, look, I understand the chaos of all this, but I'm just saying, relative to expectation, if you got a number one overall pick, this guy seems as can't miss as just about anybody we've seen at 7'4", 7'5", maybe still growing and super smooth. So I don't know that teams like, let's just say, the Portland Trailblazers or Sacramento Kings or teams that are kind of fighting, it would appear they would be fighting for a play-in, you know, maybe late playoff spot.
Right.
I do think one of those teams is going to get off to a cold start and say, you know what, let's go to plan B.
I've got some sleeper tank teams I want to throw out you, but before I get to that, we know that the teams that are definitely tanking, right? The San Antonios, yeah. Houston and Oklahoma City are just bad enough to just be considered in there. Eventually, it feels like the Pacers are going to get there. Utah is eventually going to get there. This probably...
Utah's the one team I could see maybe looking at, because their team right now, they've always looked like, hey, we have some assets for a trade deadline, but let's wait till then. One team that says, why wait? Let's make the move now. Let's be safe.
No, let's not risk winning like an extra 5 games with Mike Conley and this group that we otherwise wouldn't have won. I'm with you. I think something like this could influence them to just start selling off those veteran parts even sooner than they would have otherwise. I do think that Wembanyama's performance in Vegas is really meaningful. You start talking to people around the league and it's like, okay, we knew who this guy was, but now that he's stateside, American soil, and we just watched him do this on a very big stage on ESPN and did not shy away from the moment whatsoever. It just goes from, okay, does this guy really exist over there in France, to we're seeing him in person. This is real. This is tangible. And we want this in our uniform. Sleeper tank teams, I'm going to throw them at you.
I can't wait.
These are like less sleepery, but I'll start with them. Charlotte and Orlando. I think Charlotte is not very talented, and they could just end up being really bad. You could trade away a Terry Rozier and a Gordon Hayward and just kind of plummet your way to the bottom. Orlando,
this one's tough.
I love Orlando. They're over under. We did it last week at 27 wins. I think we both like the over on that. But like, if things kind of go south and maybe it's a little bit rougher than we expect initially for Paolo Banchero for some reason, even though I don't really expect that. I don't know. I could see this is the guy made for Orlando. Like, the Magic love guys like this, and I could see them just being like, you know what? Let's just play all the young guys as many minutes as possible. Let's experiment. Let's let Markel Fultz shoot as many threes as he wants, and like, let's just kind of like pseudo tank, like kind of like sneaky tank. I don't know.
So here's the thing, Wes. There is a cycle to rebuilding when you're bad.
Yeah.
The first year, maybe 2 years, leaning into the tank, I don't think is that damaging. It's not that bad because you got young players and they're playing and they're focused on other things and it's early enough in their development. There's a moment in time, and I don't know if Orlando's there or not, where tanking becomes a problem. You get the guy into the league. Now he's 3 years into the league, and every year the organization is trying to lose, not win, and they're doing weird things. And at a certain point, it starts to taint the experience. I kind of feel like Orlando is in that moment where they switch over. I think Banchero is one of those competitors. Franz Wagner is really good.
Yeah.
You've already got Suggs and a bunch of other young players that to ask them to continue to sort of the charade, that might be tough. So for me, I agree with you that it would be smart on paper. Just go for this guy. You want to go for it. But if you swing, and by the way, you only are going to have, you know, the odds are so flat now that being the worst team isn't that much more valuable.
Right.
I think a team like Orlando might not pull the ripcord right away. They might try to at least make it to the All-Star break and just see where they are.
I agree with you. I think I agree with you. And they think Paolo's that guy anyway. They think they've got their number one guy. And so I don't think they have as much motivation to try to tank to go get that number one guy, even though this guy is a very different guy. And I love Paolo Banchero. This is a very different kind of player. All right, here are the ones I was really excited to talk to you about. Washington. It feels like this is a no-brainer. I know that Bradley Beal is committed. I know he's got the no-trade clause. We love it. Good for Bradley Beal. Get your money, $50 million a year. Committed, loyal, all these fun things that people used to care about. You think Kristaps Porzingis is going to be that second banana next to Bradley Beal? All right, Wizards. Like, cool. I get it. I see what you're selling. You're going to get 20 games into this regular season and realize that that is not so. Right. And it just feels like, all right, do you eventually just do the thing that we all know that you should have done 2 years ago with the Wizards? Trade Bradley Beal. Do whatever you got to do with Kristaps Porzingis and go after and just completely tank and go after Wembanyama.
There's a lot of veterans on that team. To me, they are more like Utah in that I don't think you can convince Will Barton, Monte Morris, Bradley Beal, Kristaps Porzingis, hey, we're going to be bad this year. Those guys aren't there for that. They're not.
Right.
They're in the middle of their career. Maybe even with Will Barton, you know, past the middle of his career. So asking those guys, hey, we're playing this long game, I don't think that flies as well. So they're in a tough spot. That's another team. But again, when you asked about will teams kind of pull the ripcord early, I guess I would throw them in as another team that I could see getting to not that far, getting to November, right. You know, and saying, hey, what are we end of November? You're 8-15 and thinking, what are we doing here? Those 8 wins are killing us now. We're so far behind. But for teams like that, it would be tough because it means us talking about this is actually making me think, Wes, I wonder if just veterans are going to be more available throughout the year because there's teams like that that realize, what are we doing with these guys? Sell them off right away.
Yeah, I think veterans on these teams that are going to be definite tank teams will be more available because even I know that the odds are not as good as they used to be, but there will be like teams are just going to do stuff, right? They're going to do dumb things or maybe not dumb things necessarily. They're just going to trade off good pieces, teams that are already in this like lottery zone just to even just the thought of increasing their odds for this guy. I think he's just that good. The other one is Chicago. You and I both took the under on them at like 41 or 42 wins or whatever it was that BetOnline had him at. And you and I both like the under there. And if it goes under, and if they know pretty quickly that it is going under, Nikola Vucevic is on an expiring contract. DeMar DeRozan, feels like he's had his best Bulls season already. It's probably not going to get that much better. They're already dealing with the Lonzo Ball thing. His knee is made of sponge material, so I guess like
I hate that.
It's terrible, but it's already kind of not starting great for the Bulls. And so if you get, you know, like you said, November, December, and you're just like, wow, like last year was sort of our weird window. That was kind of it for this group, for this core. Do you start selling off pieces maybe?
You've convinced me that the answer is yes. I mean, when we were saying this, my original thought was, you know, the teams that we already knew were going to tank and were they going to steer away? And then I think about teams like Sacramento and Portland, who I don't think so. I think they'll be slower.
They won't do it.
But once you start to mention the Chicagos, the Washingtons, the Charlottes, those are the teams that I could definitely see, you know, learning early. I mean, this is a very competitive year. There's going to be a team that is actually good that just maybe it's an injury, maybe it's just bad bounce of the ball that starts a little bit behind the eight ball to start the season. And if they're that caliber team, I mean, like, I don't think this is like if Memphis, for example, an actual good team, got off to a slow start. Like, there's no ripcord for a team like that. Or even if I go lower than that, if I think of a team like a Minnesota, you know, those are teams that are all in on the things that they
right.
already
New
have.
New Orleans, right.
But I do think there are the Washingtons of the world, the Charlotte, Chicago. Yeah. I do think those are teams that I could see pulling the ripcord.
The Kings do it. The Kings are so motivated to make the playoffs. And all of this is just all the teams that we're talking about, so many of them are in the Western Conference. I feel like the play-in tournament is wide open for Sacramento. They're just going to walk right into the play-in. All of this just means that the Sacramento Kings are getting to the play-in tournament. That's what I've gotten from
Sacramento and Minnesota are kind of in that same zone where right. it means a little extra to them to be in the playoffs than it does to your average team. So, man, that's wild. I will say this. The odds, if you look at it, 52%. For a top four, 14% for the number one overall pick, top three teams, then it drops to 12.5, then 10.5, then 9. The idea of tanking so that you have a 1.5% better chance at the first seed to me is a little dumb. So we'll see what happens. I do think you almost want to be just a bottom six seed, and maybe that requires less tanking.
And maybe that's where the sleeper teams come in, because if you're Chicago, if you're Washington, you're probably not a bottom six team, but you would have to start tanking a little bit to even get there. Draymond Green apologized to the Warriors. We're going to play a new game. We're going to ask, does it even matter in the next segment? But first, today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for football betting information this season. Find all the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, and in-depth articles and analysis on every game you can find. And as always, BetOnline remains your continued source for all of your sport wagering information, with live betting and up-to-the-minute scores for every sport out there. The fastest and easiest way to check in on all of your favorite games and events, including Major League Baseball, MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to BetOnline.net or use your mobile device to learn more. It's BetOnline, where the game starts. Back here with Locked On NBA. Remember that we have our big preview coming up, and I am looking for the copy for that. Boom. Make sure to check out the Ultimate Pro Basketball Preview starting October 10th, a six-episode extravaganza to get you ready for the NBA season. The local team experts and the NBA insiders of the Locked On Podcast Network and Odyssey all combining into one Ultimate NBA Preview. Starting October 10th, search for the Ultimate Pro Basketball Preview 2022 on your Odyssey app, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to play a new game this segment called Does It Matter? And we're going to start with the latest on Draymond Green. Warriors GM Bob Myers saying that Draymond apologized to the Warriors on Thursday after reportedly punching teammate Jordan Poole in practice on Wednesday. Myers also said that the team is still deciding how to discipline Draymond, but they do not expect him to miss any games. So this brings us to our new game. Adam, does it matter that Draymond apologized?
I mean, of course it matters. You have to, you know, to not apologize would be worse. Ergo, it must matter. It's an interesting situation. I mean, isn't it Pat Riley, the disease of Moore? Was it Phil Jackson? I don't remember.
That's Pat Riley.
So you have you win something, and then it's so hard for everyone to come back and just be content with the way you did it. Everybody wants a little bit more. And we know, you know, the dynamics are obviously well publicized with Draymond Green. On the back end of his career, what we expect to be the most useful part of his career and waiting for that one more contract, you got Jordan Poole expected to get a nice contract. So you have the disease of Moore, I think, was most obviously coming for this Warriors team. They just were set up for it. I say all that to say this Warriors team is so talented. I think they're one of the favorites and should be one of the favorites to win the title. But these are the type of things that the more you cover the league, the more you have to fit these into the equation of, is there anything not basketball related that might make these things a little difficult? And look, we might not remember this story in 3, 4, 5 months, especially 7, 8 months. It might be one of those things where, like, I vaguely remember this, but it also might be a sign of things to come with a team.
Yeah.
And so does it matter that he apologized? Yes, because it is important to, but this story to me is like, we got to give it several weeks, if not months, before we can declare them over this.
This is a symptom possibly of that greater kind of story going on with the Warriors, which is you've got the old vets who are going to want to get paid, and you got the young guys who have not gotten paid yet, and they're going to want to get paid. And the headliner in the young group is Jordan Poole, who's still up for an extension. We'll see whether or not he signs it before the start of the regular season. My former colleague, Dieter Kurtenbach, over at the San Jose Mercury News, wrote a great column about this whole thing where, the Warriors are going to they're going to get over this. They handle this internal drama really well, and especially ever since Kevin Durant left. Like, all this stuff, they handle the Draymond stuff well. They're able to get over these things. We're probably not going to talk about this in a few weeks at all, but the underlining thing is that you've got a group of veterans and you've got a group of young players, and because of the NBA luxury tax, it's just not going to work. You can't keep all of them together, so something's going to have to give. And you're going to have frustrations. You're going to have people worrying about it. You're going to have people wondering, just like at the end of that last Kevin Durant season, like, what does the future look like? And when you have people asking that, we've already seen that cast a dark cloud over this organization once before. I'm not saying it's the same thing this time, but I do wonder if we're going to see just other things kind of just come out of the conflict that's already boiling between vets and young guys.
And this is the thing about they all the time. I would bet of the 30 teams, there's probably been 20 different teams that have experienced some level of fight. You just haven't heard about them, because for them to get out, they have to be a certain level of it. And that's why this one is like, this is not just two guys got in each other's face. There was a little shove, maybe a little elbow, a little triple. Clearly this is something a little bit elevated that has roots that are deep enough for the team to say, we have to do something.
Let's go to Abu Dhabi, where the Hawks and the Bucks played a preseason game that also served as our first look at the Trae Young, DeJounte Murray backcourt. The two combined for 47 points, and Murray had 9 assists, and the Hawks won the game. My question to you, Adam, is, does it matter?
Well, I didn't see this game, so I can't speak to the level of how much it matters in any type of good faith. But I can speak to several years of basketball experience covering the NBA and say that no, preseason games, especially those that are played literally halfway around the world, do not carry that much weight. It means something. Sure, all of this is data points, but does it mean something important or significant? I feel pretty confident saying no.
I was encouraged to see Trae Young working off the ball. The Hawks clearly, in watching this game, were emphasizing DeJounte Murray being on the ball. And he had 9 assists in the game, like I said. And you had Trae Young mainly operating off the ball. And one of the big questions with whether or not this backcourt would work is, if Trae Young would buy into being more of an off-ball rover, could he tap into that Steph Curry-ness a little bit and be an effective off-ball player instead of just sort of standing around the way that he did before? And the answer, at least in one preseason game in Abu Dhabi, was yes. He was moving around without the ball. But again, we see things like this all the time in the preseason. Are you going to buy in for 82 games? Are you going to buy in the playoffs? Are you going to keep moving off the ball when your legs are tired in January and February? We will see, but early signs, I thought, were at least very encouraging. Next, LeBron said this week that he wants to own a team in Vegas, specifically telling Adam Silver through the media that he wants to own that team. Adam, does it matter?
I mean, it matters, of course, because what kind of way is this to handle things? I don't get it. Does LeBron James not have Adam Silver's number? Is this a thing like that he couldn't just let that be known through the back channels, or, hey, can I be working on this? This is such a bizarre way to handle it. And by bizarre, I mean like bizarrely inappropriate, ridiculous. I mean, LeBron, is his influence on the league and his ability to manipulate it not strong enough to come out and handle it in this way, to me, is absolutely absurd. It matters.
I wonder if this was less of a direct thing to Adam and maybe more of an indirect statement to potential investors, guys who can go in on that deal with LeBron. Yeah. I wonder if he's making it known that he wants that done. And look, Adam Silver has already come out recently and said, look, Las Vegas would be a great spot for expansion as well as Seattle. It's something that he expects to happen eventually, but not something that they're currently looking at right now. Maybe this is LeBron saying, maybe look at it sooner rather than later. Let's get the wheels turning, because once LeBron retires, I assume he's going to want to just go right into ownership. But maybe it's also kind of putting the word out to potential investors who might want to go in on this kind of thing with him. Because as rich as LeBron James is, he's probably not rich enough to buy an NBA team right away.
And even if you are rich enough, there's good value in having other people's money that you spend for this. The one thing I will say is that Las Vegas is Lakers territory. LeBron is on the Lakers. LeBron is getting Jeannie Buss to do a lot of uncomfortable things on his behalf, things that haven't traditionally been expected of Lakers ownership, to appease sort of their superstar.
Right.
To then go and say, like, hey, but also when this is all, I'm stealing some of the turf, or I'm going to attempt to steal some of the turf. So it's probably a part of this that I haven't seen discussed a whole lot.
Interesting.
That's just Lakers real estate. So yeah. It's an interesting one. It's coming one way or another, but it's weird for a current player to sort of say, hey, I'm going to try to own that.
Yeah, I'm playing for this team. I want to own a new team. And by the way, that new team might be cannibalizing your current merchandise sales.
Just a little bit.
Like that. Yeah. All right, finally, during the broadcast of Wembanyama's game, Rudy Gobert joined the broadcast and said that he has bonded with Carl Anthony Towns over their mutual love of anime. Adam, does it matter?
Sure. Why not? Teammates have to bond over something. Okay. Who am I to judge what those things are? Earlier in the year, Jeff Green let it be known that he has been inquisitive about horse racing with Nikola Jokic in an effort to sort of get close to him.
Okay.
So teammates finding weird commonalities to bond over. Yeah, sure. It's great.
Classic dating move, by the way. You just pretend to be into something that the other person is on a first date. You know, it's just like,
wow,
oh, you love gardening? Yeah, no, so that, yeah, I love grass and apples and pumpkins. Yeah.
Big grass guy over here.
Totally. Yeah, big grass. That's an impression of me on a first date. All right, we got our weekly power rankings coming up next here on Locked On NBA. Back here with Locked On NBA, it's Friday, which means we are counting down to the weekend with our weekly power rankings. Adam, what do we got?
So, in honor of Victor, man, am I screwing this up? For some reason, I have a hard time. Wembanyama. I'm close.
Okay.
I'm slowly moving. I want to get it right, but
yeah.
This is what's so interesting about him. We haven't had this level of hype for somebody, in my opinion, since LeBron. Like, prospects come and go, but this has been story number one in the NBA. In basketball or European basketball or AAU basketball, it's been the number one NBA story now for what, 3 or 4 days, obviously highlighted by him coming to the US and doing this tournament. But I think he has just captivated the imagination enough in a way that even the great players that have gone number one overall and have been clear, penciled them in as number one picks over the last 20 years, as even very few, if any, of those guys have done. So I think it's very interesting.
This is very, like, these two games that they played on ESPN in Las Vegas, very, very LeBron James at St. Mary's playing high school games on ESPN. Very, very similar vibes. And the way people are talking about him, not just in the media, but people like in basketball who have vested interest in this kid, they're talking about him in such a way that he's got to be up there with some of the great prospects that have been coming out recently. And I know that this is the list we have.
So I'm going to call these can't miss prospects, in my opinion. Now, four of these guys went number one. One of them did not. So people are going to naturally disagree if they're going to say, hey, he wasn't can't miss. Ooh. He didn't even go number one. In my opinion, there were some weird things going on there. But
yeah,
for the rest of these guys, number
was
one
it,
picks.
Was it Herb Jones that you're talking about?
That's Herb Jones. How did they not see it? How did they not see it? I can guard it. All right. Number five, this one's my most controversial. People are going to, I think, agree with the list more or less. Three of the top five, four of the top five, maybe.
So we're going five to like the least most can't miss to one being the most. Okay. All right. Good. Very good. Number five.
The fifth most can't miss guy, in my opinion, of the last 22 years is Zion Williamson. Now, here's the thing. There's a little bit of hype. There was that hype around him, just the physical dominance. Once you saw it at the college level, it was like, because I know it in the high school level, it was, well, we'll see if this translates. Once it translated to just absolute dominance, I do think there was a level of, with Zion coming in, there was questions about health, of course, just because anybody that size. But I think people felt like this guy is so big that at minimum, when you have a number one pick, your fear is that the guy just becomes a nothing, that you ended up wasting a pick and it was Anthony Bennett and all of a sudden it's like this nothing. If you can get a floor of a guy who just like punishes teams no matter what, then I think that, and that's what Zion was to me. His seemed very, very high coming into the NBA, and his upside seemed very, very achievable. And even though he's had this injury, I think more or less that has played out in the early part of his career, has played out that when he's on the court, there's really not anything anybody can do about him. So to me,
dominant.
He was number five.
Probably would have been higher if he didn't get hurt late in that, you know, in his Duke year, you know. So if he doesn't get injured and if he doesn't, you know, put his foot through a Nike shoe, he's probably even higher on this list, but number five makes a lot of sense.
Number four to me is Anthony Davis.
Okay.
And Anthony Davis to me, like we all remember the national championship game. I can't remember. I think he had like 4 points or something. It wasn't a lot. Yeah. And yet was still so dominant. It was, you know, a lot of times, like, as you go deeper in the tournament, it's like, okay, I want to see how this guy handles pressure. He somehow didn't score a lot in that game. He might have gotten scored. I don't remember what it was, but he didn't score a lot. But he absolutely dominated it. He was one of those guys that you thought, this could be one of the most offensively unstoppable big men in the league in a few years, and he became that. But defensively, he was a can't miss. This is a versatile defender. The league was already starting to move positionless. To me, Anthony Davis was one of those guys when you saw him that you were like, floor, probably an all-star.
Yeah, Anthony Davis scored 6 points in that game. 1-10 shooting, 16 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, and 6 blocks. I remember watching that game, and the box score doesn't even do it justice. It didn't matter that he didn't score. I think people forget now almost too that Anthony Davis was such a can't miss prospect because he played, first of all, in New Orleans for a really long time, and just people didn't really watch that team, casuals. Right. But and then with the Lakers, he's been injured, and then it's, you know, the Lakers circus and that whole thing. That guy, they were touting him as the next Tim Duncan, right? As a can't miss prospect. I thought he'd be on your list.
He was number 4. Number 3 to me, this is the controversial one. Number 3 to me is Luka Doncic. Now, history is going to remember this differently because there were people that thought he was very much a player. But I think history is going to actually look at those people and say, no, they were just ridiculous. And probably look back and say, of course this guy was a can't-miss prospect. Just look at the accolades, you know, coming into it. All EuroLeague first team, EuroLeague MVP as a teenager. Like, you just look at that and think, I mean, how many players now looking at how good Europe has become and this or that, how many players could have pulled that off and not been like an absolute can't miss? And then, of course, Luka came into the league immediately and just wrecked worlds. To me, he is the third most can't miss player. His floor, to me, was an all-star player. His mid-tier is an MVP candidate. And his top tier is like a top 10 player of all time. So to me, he was guy, and somehow he went third.
That was the weirdest draft because – anybody who knew anything about basketball, and I'm not trying to be a snob here, but like you even talk to people within the league and in draft circles, and everybody was like, I don't understand how this guy is not being talked about, like Zion and Anthony Davis and LeBron and all these guys. Like, he is a can't miss prospect, and yet Marvin Bagley goes ahead of him. And I do think that this is gonna, it was like that weird, I think we're in such a modern era in the NBA where you have so much access to information and tape and you have scouts traveling the entire world to go find this great prospects. And yet it was this weird little blip of a like kind of old school thinking that just existed at the top of this draft where people started doubting Luka Doncic. And I understand that he was a little heavy set, maybe a little slow, and people wondered if his game would translate to the NBA speed and all that stuff.
Yeah, people overthought themselves for
overthought it. And I was like, all right, I'm sorry, just watch the games. This guy is unbelievable. And it was weird.
Look at the results. I mean, the thing that I kind of get irked by is there. I think this is changing, by the way, because of Giannis, because of Jokic, because of Luka, three of the best. And now Wemby, potentially coming over. But I do think people looked at that because I think right now, if you said he was the EuroLeague MVP and won a EuroLeague championship, leading the team and being the team's best player at that age in the second best league in the world, just right below it. And if you compare EuroLeague to the NCAA Final Four, not close. Remarkably close. So if a guy went to won an NCAA championship and won the MVP and was a top prospect, you'd be like, yeah, that matters for something. Doing it in a league competition that is tenfold more competitive, to me, is absolutely absurd. And then, of course, he came in immediately and matched what everyone should have expected of him. So to me, if that draft happened, if we just delayed everything and Luka was coming in right now, people would view him the way appropriately and say, oh, yeah, that guy's great. And I think, by the way, Wemby, the physical tools stand out, and I think that helps him obviously a lot. But I do think there's probably a little softening towards, we were probably wrong about Europe 5 years ago. We need to not discount it at all anymore.
It's Luka, trailblazer. Who's number 2?
Number 2 is Wembanyama.
There it is.
This one, I am giving him this one. I mean, we're including him, obviously, for this next year. I debated putting him number 1, but I can't do it. But for me, he's even ahead. It's crazy of me to even put him ahead Luka, who had already sort of proven it as a winner in this or that. But I'm sorry. 7'4", 7'5", growing. That shot, some of the shots he's taking and making. The only concern I have for him. And by the way, I've talked to some different scouts and people around the NBA. High character guy too, by all accounts. Like a book, you know, like guy that very studious,
I've heard the same thing.
You know, very driven, has a good competitive spirit. So there's no like red flags about, oh, maybe he doesn't love the game or maybe he's soft or this or that. By all accounts, very focused, committed, and grounded for a guy his age. And on top of that, he just has a skill set we've never seen. And by the way, this is the thing that scares me the most as somebody that fears he is going to wreck the league and be too good. It's two players he idolizes or models his game after, Kevin Durant and Giannis Antetokounmpo. I can see it.
Yeah.
I can kind of see it.
Yeah.
There's 7'5" Giannis mixed with KD is not that far off of like sort of the best case scenario for this guy.
I brought up Kevin Durant, but like with 4 more inches an NBA executive. They did not out of pocket completely disagree with me. Like it wasn't way like off the chart craziness to even say that, which is to me everything you need to know. People love this guy. There was so many people that just flocked to Vegas to get a look at him that I really, going back to our first segment, this is gonna be a thing all year long, not just during the showcase in Las Vegas on ESPN. This is gonna be something that's gonna be talked about, at least in league circles, if not just nationally, like on radio shows and podcasts and things. It's gonna be talked about in league circles all season long. Who's gonna end up with Wembanyama? I think I know who number one is.
Number one, of course, is Nikola Jokic. no, I'm kidding. It's LeBron James. It's LeBron. Now, I might feel really dumb saying this. I mean, Wimby is that kind of guy that he makes it. But it's easy for me to rewind LeBron and look at it and say, not only are the physical attributes there, he's one of the greatest athletes we've ever seen come through here. He stands 6'8", 6'9". He had the body, even as a high schooler, that you're like, yeah, that guy's going to be a monster. He looks like young Karl Malone. He's going to fill into that body as we saw. But then the skill set was just so polished at 17 years old that you knew for him, his floor was going to probably be, as it was, it almost immediately was, his floor would be an all-star and his ceiling was greatest of all time. And, who knows? It's impossible for me to put Wimby ahead of him just because I'm LeBron's age. I was around at that time and I remember what the hype was like. I remember the expectations and I remember how much it felt like there's just no chance he was going to be bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And he looked like what you expect a star NBA player to look like, right? He was that wing kind of player. He had the skill level of Luka coming out of EuroLeague in high school, but like built like Karl Malone already. He looked like an NFL running back where you're like, okay, this guy, the one thing, if you're going to knock everybody else, right? With Zion, it was a little bit of health. With Anthony Davis, it was like, okay, as the game passed that position by a little bit.
Right. At that time.
With Luka, it was the Europe thing, rightly or wrongly, that was a factor. With Wembanyama now, I think there will be people a little he's 7'4" and he's rail thin. Right. Are we concerned about that? But with LeBron, it's just like, find something. You can't. It's just check mark.
Feel for the game, vision, passing, body.
Yes.
All those. He checked every box. It's like he's mixed risk prospect. We've seen, at least at the high school level, the least risk prospect that you could have possibly had.
I'm trying to think of anybody that you may have left off the list, and I don't know that I have anybody that I could think of. Ben Simmons, I mean, the talk around him coming out, but the LSU year was so underwhelming.
Yeah.
It was more like when he was sort of coming into LSU that it was more like that.
The two guys that I kind of paused for, Yao Ming was 7'5" and extremely skilled, and that was kind of at the very beginning of this one. But I think even with him, there was just the body concerns at that moment. Unlike Wemby, even though he is tall and has some of those same concerns, with Yao, I think it was just even the weight and the way he moved, and he was always just a little bit more lumbering. Right. Dwight Howard was another guy you could put on there.
Yeah.
And then I would say Kevin Durant, except for, unlike with Luka, at least with Luka there was a very large contingent of people saying, what are we doing here? And with KD, I think it was a little bit more split. KD's great. Even the people that were with KD, but Greg Oden, brings all these other different things. So
Greg Oden could have made your list. I mean, it obviously didn't pan out. The people thought the floor for Greg Oden was like multi-time all-star center.
Yeah, that's fair. And it's hard to put our brains back into 2005 or whatever that year was, 2007, because it was just such a different league. I mean, nowadays we would look at Greg Oden and say, of course, but at that time, centers were still kind of more of a thing. So,
yeah.
So I don't know. But I think my five, I don't know if I would go back on any of the five that
no,
I put there.
I agree
unless I'm forgetting somebody that wasn't first, but for reasons that were like Luka, but I don't really remember going through the list.
Joel Embiid was a little strange because he was coming off of a late injury in college, Kansas, but otherwise would have been the number one pick, and people just loved him. But the thing with him was like he was big and he had the injury issues, and so that's a huge factor. But that would have been the only one. No, I like your five. That makes sense to me. All right. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On NBA wherever you listen to the podcast for 30 minutes of the NBA's top stories every day. Also, make sure to subscribe and ring the bell here on YouTube. Until next Friday, you can find me over at Locked On Heat and Adam over in Locked On Nuggets. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. Now make your second listen, Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Josh Lloyd hosts the number one daily fantasy basketball show on the planet. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts.